Seems we can count on radar for almost anything where it's a matter of strike and destroy, but not to get our men back safe through fog.
That's the way it is, Captain. Until we get a break in the weather, our fighters are grounded.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, April 14th, 1946, we present the 22nd in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today...
Fire! Come home!
Conceived and perfected in the sea than the prod of war... to bring down the odds against death for flyers in combat.
And now offered to all who fly and are flown in peacetime, the United States Navy's Mark II GCA.
Its story is our subject for today.
Flyer, come home.
This is Robert St. John in New York. The National Hour has canceled its previously scheduled subject to bring you a news scoop. Today, the Navy released a story to the people of America. Now, we bring you the complete details of this story. The story of the amazing and hitherto secret device for bringing aviators safely home through fog and darkness and all the other elements which blind a flyer from his roost. The story of the United States Navy's Mark II GCA. Ground-controlled approach.
This is Robert McCormick at the Naval Air Station at Patuxent River, Maryland. I am standing in a GCA control unit. There's a plane on the runway, a standard twin-engine Douglas transport, preparing to take off, and that's part of our story. Through this plane, piloted by Lieutenant Commander William Lamar of Charleston, North Carolina, with Lieutenant John A. Montgomery of Corsicana, Texas, as co-pilot, through this plane, you, the listeners to the National Hour, will participate in the first public demonstration of the hitherto secret system of ground-controlled approach. The plane is taking off now. It's roaring down the runway. The plane is airborne, and now we are standing by.
You've heard us mention the letters GCA and the words ground-controlled approach. Each word by itself is simple enough. And together, well, we know that they have to do with bringing a plane safely in from a distance of 30 miles down to a landing on a runway completely blacked out to the flyer. Those words have to do with landing any type of a plane, from a Cub to a supergiant Mars. How is this done? Well, GCA involves some complicated devices and some intricate calculations, but the principle? You're trying to get your car into a tight squeeze parking spot, and a helpful passerby takes pity.
Okay, cut your wheel sharp to the left. All the way. That's it. I come ahead. Easy. That's it. Whoa. Now straighten out and come forward. That's it. Easy now. Easy. All right, enough. Now cut your wheels all the way to your right.
Or think of GCA this way.
To me, they're the wonder of the world. Absolutely.
Who?
Pigeons. Now, you take a pigeon and put him in a box and ship him out to Cleveland, Ohio, say. And somebody lets him out there, and rain or shine, son of a gun, if that pigeon don't find his way back to his own loft on a house on Webster Avenue, Somerville, Massachusetts. Homing instinct, they call it.
Well, someday some brain will invent a machine like that for everybody.
That I would like to see.
Almost 6 years ago, the world went to war. And in the locker of armaments was Mickey. Mickey, the greatest secret weapon of all time. Mickey didn't shoot or kill or burn. In itself, it was perfectly harmless. But with amazing speed and unerring accuracy, Mickey directed searchlights toward planes. Mickey directed anti-aircraft guns toward raiders. Mickey directed ship's guns toward an invisible enemy. Among the scientists who were working secretly and constantly to perfect new refinements and uses for it, Mickey was known as radio detection and ranging. But little by little, a new word for Mickey slipped into use. It became the darling word of the quiz shows and the despair of certain radio comedians. It was a purposeful palindrome. That is, a word which spells the same thing backwards and forwards. In this case, radar. The total war went on in the Pacific, in Africa, in Europe. The total war went on not only in the areas of combat, but in the factories and laboratories far from sight and sound of battle. And out of the laboratories came forms of radar that were the powerful, uncanny, guiding weapons behind the weapons of war. One of the air tactics which plagued the enemy from the fields of Europe to the kamikaze bases in Japan was the night fighter team. Two men made up the team, a pilot in a fast plane and a radio operator on the ground. Somewhere high in the black night is the plane. Radar combs the sky. A blob of light on the screen shows up an enemy plane. The enemy is almost 20 miles away, but the teams move into swift action.
Contact turn port. We are moving over to port to line up with a target 20 degrees to our port. Steady on the turn.
Steady on the turn.
Target is dead ahead at 10,000 feet and 15 degrees above us.
Roger.
Increase speed 60 miles an hour.
Increasing speed. Speed set.
We've established a 40 mile an hour speed advantage. Target has moved up to 3,000 feet. Turn gently, port.
Turning gently, port.
Turn harder, port.
Turning harder, port.
Turn hard as possible, port. Rock it.
Rocking it.
Steady on the turn.
Steady.
Target is dead ahead at 5,000 feet and 10 degrees above us.
Roger.
Increase speed 50 miles an hour more, and we close in for the final approach and kill.
Roger.
There is no evasive action. Target doesn't know we've got him, but we know where he is. Dead ahead, 2,000 feet. 10 degrees above. This is it. We're closing fast and have him smack in front of us. Start looking out and up.
Roger, I have him. Tally-ho, pounce.
The planes went up around the clock to scout, to bomb, to strike. Many did not return to their bases. Many almost got home. Many within sight of their bases went down into the sea, crashed into hills and mountains, drove into the earth. Many were within sight of their fields, but one element, fog, blinded them from home.
Jackson calling Saipan. Jackson calling Saipan. Jackson calling Saipan.
Raise anything yet, Si?
It's no use, Cappy. Nobody hears us, nobody sees us.
There must be a break in this fog someplace.
Sure, sure. And someplace the sun is shining.
Cut it out, Si.
Well, we don't have enough gas to make the holder of an A-card happy.
Polo calling.
Listen.
Jackson. Polo calling Jackson. Polo calling
it's
Jackson.
It's us. They hear us.
Jackson Apollo. Jackson Apollo. Over.
We've been looking for you. You're way off your course.
Our compass is gone. Our gas is going fast.
What's your altitude?
It says 6,000, but we can't be sure. It's acting funny.
You better climb. There's mountains around you.
I'm going up, Si.
Okay, kid. Let's try. Hey, Cappy!
Cappy!
We've lost 3 days already, Colonel. What a break for the Jerries.
I know, Captain, I know. But this is the bad season. We've lost too many men and planes on their way back from missions. We've lost them to the weather.
Seems we can count on radar for almost anything where it's a matter of strike and destroy.
but not to get our men back safe through fog.
That's the way it is, Captain. Until we get a break in the weather, our fighters are grounded.
But long before our flyers were confronted with the dread danger of landings made in fog, the problem was presented to the scientists and technicians of the United States Navy Radiation Laboratory at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
And let me emphasize this, gentlemen. These planes were within touching point of home when we lost them.
Well, generally, what are the specifications for this project, sir?
A device to bring planes down through the overcast, Dr. Alvarez. Even in conditions that might be ZZ, zero ceiling, zero visibility. Whatever you can give them is needed out there. Time also is the enemy.
In the Navy Radiation Laboratory, the investigators, under the direction of Dr. Louis Alvarez, cleared the ground of the known in their search for the unknown.
Well, these are all Dr. Alvarez. They complete the reports on all known and used systems of blind landings. None of them adaptable for our purpose.
Well, then our answer isn't here, Mr. Johnston.
I'd hope that someplace in all of these we might find something we could use, if only for a springboard.
I'm afraid we have to break away completely. We must begin all over again.
Time also is the enemy.
How's about it, Lieutenant J.G.? Are you coming?
No, thanks, Cran. I'm going to stick around the cabin.
Well, it's not a war picture this time, Jake. It's Grable or one of those gals.
Some other time.
Still thinking about Lindquist, huh? You ought to turn over that page.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. The thing that eats me, Cran, is a flyer like Lindquist getting finished off by a fog.
They still may find him.
Sure. And tomorrow I'll rumble in the water.
Well, then forget him or you'll go nuts.
You know, have you ever thought about the radar on this carrier?
Huh? Well, what about it?
Well, that's what I've been thinking about, Cran. We got one radar that can pick up bogeys miles away. We got another radar that can lay a gun on a dime which you can't even see.
Okay, Jake. So what?
So that's what I've been thinking. Look, couldn't the bright boys back home figure out how to use these two gimmicks to bring planes home out of the fog, couldn't they?
Me, I wouldn't know. But maybe somebody someplace is wrinkling his skull about it this minute.
Time also is the enemy.
Good news, Dr. Alvarez?
We have a starting point now, Admiral. That, for us, is good news.
Is there anything you can tell me at this time?
Yes, Admiral. Now, here's what occurred to me. If microwave radar can locate a plane from the ground precisely enough to shoot it down, it's also capable of the more constructive task of guiding a plane to a safe landing in conditions of blind flying.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Go on, please, Doctor.
Well, we have decided to make a clean break with all conventional blind landing systems.
In what way?
Well, instead of putting information on a meter in front of the pilot, it will be told to him verbally. Now, this will eliminate the need of new equipment in the planes. The pilot will have most of his thinking done for him by someone on the ground.
Good. When can we expect a test?
Within the year. By December 1942.
Good.
The first experiments using aircraft were conducted at East Boston Airport and at the Naval Air Station Quonset Point.
As the heart of our precision system to gather complete data about the plane's position at all times, we began by using a mobile gun-laying radar unit. And using this data, we began to experiment with the system of talking down a pilot flying under a hood.
You're 2 miles from the airport, 30 feet below glide path. Bring it up. Turn left 240. Turn left 235. Holding steady. Okay, you're on the glide path.
How did you feel up there, Lieutenant?
Fine, Doctor, fine. It was a real satisfaction when I was under the hood to be able to follow the direction of someone who knew where I was.
We'll try another run tomorrow.
Swell. You know, I think you've got something here. When you're up there, it's like, Well, like somebody standing at your shoulder and kind of easing you in.
Early tests with the gun-laying radar were successful up to a certain point. The hitch developed in the last and critical stages of the talk down. This unit was not sufficiently accurate in following the plane at the low angles just before approach to the runway. The gun-laying radar was abandoned, but the talk-down principle was good.
We then developed special radar antennas and a presentation for high-precision radar at low angles, combining this with a search system for traffic control.
In November 1942, a ground-controlled approach system, the Mark I GCA, was ready for tests. Operationally, Mark I GCA was a success, but technically, it was not practical for forward area use.
This brought about the development of the Mark II GCA. This set could pick up planes within a 30-mile radius, direct them unerringly to their glide path, and bring them down to within 50 feet of the runway. Exhaustively tested by Navy personnel, the Mark II GCA was accepted in August 1944.
In 6 months, approximately 10,000 successful approaches and many actual landings without visual contact were completed. The dependability of the Navy's Mark II GCA was conclusively proven.
And at a Pacific base, shortly after the installation of a Mark II GCA unit, a flyer running out of gas was talked down through a heavy overcast and was thus brought safely home.
Phew! It was either bring me down or shoot me down. Thanks for doing it the easy way, Mac.
Glad we could do it for you, Lieutenant.
Say, you did a perfect job with that GCA, Dingus. Except for one thing. You brought the nose down too hard.
What? I brought the nose down too hard.
Well, it's nothing to get excited about, but you ought to watch it.
Now, look, fella, I'm only supposed to bring you to within 50 feet of the runway. You're supposed to make the landing.
What?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to bring the plane down on the runway?
That's what I said. Hey, what's the matter?
I'm okay. But don't you realize, fella, I might have broken my neck.
This is Robert McCormick again, speaking from the Naval Air Station at Patuxent River, Maryland. We are now ready to complete our story. Now we go back to the plane that took off at the start of the program, and for the first time on the air, an actual demonstration of the Navy's Mark II GCA. I am standing in the specially designed trailer of a mobile GCA unit. The unit looks like a circus wagon. It's painted in bright orange and white squares. And the unit is known by the code name of all things, Nancy. Down the center of the trailer is a narrow aisle, and along one side of the aisle sit five men watching six radar screens. The first two screens sweep the sky for 30 miles around. They will first spot the plane that we're going to land. And the men watching these two screens will first get the pilot on the downwind leg of his approach. During this part of the landing, you will hear the pilot give his position, altitude, and heading. Then he'll be told to set his altimeters. Next comes the dramatic cockpit check, in which the pilot makes sure the plane itself is mechanically prepared for the shock of a landing. Through it all, there will be position reports. Then comes the crosswind approach with more position reports. And then another turn, and the plane will be on the final approach. This final approach is handled by the other four radar screens. Two of these screens show the exact direction in which the plane is flying. The other two radar scopes show the altitude, the elevation of the plane. The plane itself shows up on the radar as a blur of light, called a blip, about a quarter of an inch long. Between these two sets of scopes sits the final control officer, and he has gauges automatically giving him the direction and elevation of the plane. And it is he who actually tells the pilot what to do. You'll hear him tell the pilot not to talk back anymore, and he will keep the pilot on what's called the glide path, the exact route he must follow to come in safely. And remember, the pilot of the plane is under a black canopy. He cannot see outside his cockpit any more than he could if he were socked in with fog or darkness. So now I'll turn you over to this highly trained, highly skilled team of five men operating Nancy.
Nancy, 12439, this is GCA Unit Nancy. What is your present heading, altitude, and approximate position from the airport? Over.
Hello, Nancy. This is Navy 1-2-4-3-9. 2,000 feet, heading 170, approximately 5 miles northwest of the airport. Over.
Navy 4-3-9, this is Nancy. Roger. Continue on your present heading and altitude. Over.
This is 4-3-9. Continue on present heading and altitude.
4-3-9 from Nancy. Altimeter setting 3017. Over.
Hello, Nancy. 4-3-9. Altimeter setting 3017.
From Nancy's field elevation 35 feet. Over.
This is 4-3-9. Field elevation 35 feet.
Navy 4-3-9, steer right 200, fly at 1,500 feet. Over.
This is 4-3-9, steer right 200, fly at 1,500 feet.
Navy 4-3-9, this is Nancy. I have you in sight 3.5 miles west of the airport. Over.
This is 4-3-9, 3.5 miles west of the airport.
Navy 4-3-9, this is Nancy. You are now on your downwind way. Perform landing cockpit check. Over.
Hello, Nancy. This is 4-3-9, downwind performing landing cockpit check. Hello, Nancy. This is Navy 4-3-9. Landing cockpit checkoff completed.
Mr. Martino, I have 4-3-9 on unit 3 from left to right, 800 feet, 5 miles. I'll notify you when he's in his turn. Over.
Roger. 4-3-9, you are on crosswind leg, making a left-hand approach to runway 2. Over.
This is 4-3-9 on crosswind leg, making a left-hand turn to runway 2.
A 4-3-9, you are 5.5 miles southwest of the airport. Over.
This is 4-3-9, 5.5 miles southwest of the airport.
Fly at 800 feet. Over.
This is 4-3-9, fly at 800 feet.
Runway dimension 6,400 feet long, 300 feet wide. Over.
This is 4-3-9. Runway dimension 6,400 feet by 300 feet.
That is affirmative, Nancy. Out. 4-3-9. There is a plane at 1 o'clock, 2 miles closing. You have him in sight. Over.
This is 4-3-9. Do not have him in sight.
Roger, 4-3-9, steer left, 010, fly at 800 feet, over.
This is 4-3-9, steer left, 010, fly at 800 feet.
Mr. Martina, is your 010, 800 feet?
I got him. Clear to contact.
4-3-9, come out of your turn on the heading of 010, maintain 800 feet, over.
This is 4-3-9, Roger.
439, you are on your final leg. Do not acknowledge any further transmission. 010 is your heading.
5 miles.
5 miles from end of runway. Maintain 800 feet.
Out of time. Far to the right.
010 is your heading. Maintain 800 feet. 010 is your heading.
Holding to the right.
Your present altitude of 800 feet is okay. 010 is your heading.
Correcting the course. 4 miles.
4 miles from end of runway. 010 is your heading. Your present altitude is okay.
Directing slowly the course.
010 is your heading. Your present altitude of 800 feet is okay. 010 is your heading.
Holding to the right.
3 miles.
3 miles from end of runway.
Clear east,
we are
down
and locked. You are cleared to land on this approach with east, southeast at 10. 010 is your heading.
Directing the course.
You can lose an altitude now at the rate of 500 feet per minute. Coming up the glide path, 50 feet below, 40. Ease it up just a little. 40 feet below and holding. 010 is your heading. 20 feet below glide path, bring it up just a little. On glide path,
slowly to course.
Holding very nicely on glide path.
2 miles.
The plane is on the runway.
010 is
your heading. The flyer is home. The demonstration is complete. And now that the final security wrappings have been removed from the Navy's GCA, the question is, can GCA be used in peacetime aviation? We ask this question of the Navy. And so we are going to have a few words on GCA by a man who knows what GCA is all about. He is Captain James E. Dyer, commander of the Naval Air Transport Service, Atlantic Wing, who has headquarters here at Patuxent River, Maryland. Captain Dyer.
Thank you, Bob McCormick. I can state without any reservation that the Naval Air Transport Service has adopted this miracle of radar and is using it throughout its system here in the Atlantic Wing and also in the Pacific and Asiatic Wings. Planes arriving daily in Oakland, California from Honolulu and further west rarely use alternate fields now that GCA can bring them safely to a landing in through the fogs of San Francisco Bay. In the Atlantic Wing, the use of GCA in the Tokyo area has enabled NAT to keep its four-engine aircraft on close schedule despite Japan's murky winter weather. NAT's employs GCA at practically all of its main terminals and route stations. The equipment is operated on a 24-hour round-the-clock basis and has proven its worth from the viewpoint of maintaining schedules as well as from the standpoint of safety of operations. Not only does it facilitate landings under 00 condition, but it also allows takeoffs under greatly reduced minimums. We operational commanders of NAT's wings have been fortunate to have the unqualified enthusiasm and support of Rear Admiral J.W. Reeves, Jr., Commander of Naval Air Transport Service, for this new navigational aid, which may easily be the greatest contribution to aviation safety since the radio beacon became available to the airlines. We in NATS are completely sold on GCA. It has saved many lives in the past year and will undoubtedly save many more in the future.
Thank you, Captain Dyer.
On the subject of the U.S. Navy's Mark II GCA ground-controlled approach system, then, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour again next Sunday when our subject will be the Air Force of the United States Army.
This has been the National Hour. From our studio in New York and from the Naval Air Station at Patuxent River, Maryland, we have brought you the 22nd of the NBC series of Current Affairs and National Problems. Our guest speaker was Captain James E. Dyer. Robert St. John was the narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Patuxent River, Maryland. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.